Episode 295 of The Pilot. The Pilot Podcast takes off now. Fly with Garmin Avionics, then grab your mobile device and make the Garmin Pilot app your cockpit companion. Get advanced functions you'll use before, during, and after every flight, including updating your aircraft's databases and logging engine data. Plan, file, fly, log with Garmin Pilot.
The Pilot to Pilot Podcast is brought to you by Learn the Finer Points. Use the link below to save 10% off their ground school app.
Aviation, there's a new offer from SiriusXM. Make sure you upgrade your next flight without upgrading your plane by getting the Garmin GDL52 portable receiver. The GDL52 has ADS-B traffic and weather, plus SiriusXM weather and entertainment. It has Bluetooth and works with Garmin Pilot apps. For a limited time, you can get a $300 rebate on the GDL52, plus it comes with a free 3-month trial of SiriusXM's weather and entertainment. I love flying with SiriusXM, and it's honestly one of my favorite features about having the G5000, so the GDL52 will offer you a very similar outlook on the weather and also getting to listen to some awesome radio stations on SiriusXM. So check out the GDL52 at aopa.org/SiriusXM.
Hey, my name is Fernando Contreras. I'm an airline pilot, first officer on the 737, and also founder of Fit Aviators Club, and I'm happy to be here, man.
AV Nation, what is going on, and welcome back to the Pilot Podcast. My name is Justin Seams, and I am your host. Today's episode is an episode with Fernando. Fernando is a second time coming on the podcast. We have an update to his career, what is going on, how he has gone from regional airline FO captain to now mainline FO. So we talk about his path, where he's gone, and how he didn't wait for the flow, and he went and applied on his own and got hired at a mainline carrier. It's a great episode. I love having these episodes where we can kind of recap what we talked about in the past and then how it has changed and where they are today. If you'd like to hear some episodes with some previous guests and see where they are today, let me know. Send me a DM on Instagram. Email me at justin@pilot2pilothq.com and let me know what guest you want to know and see and find out where they're at today, because it'd be kind of fun. But Aviation, hope you're having a great day. Without any further ado, here's Fernando.
Love having you here, man. It's been a while. We were just talking about this. This was 2019, maybe 2019, I think. So before the pandemic came and before it upended everything for a hot minute, we had a good conversation. So it's always had love having you on.
We definitely did, man. It brought so many people to asking so many questions. You have a huge following, obviously. And I was really grateful back then that you were able to bring me on and just talk about some fitness stuff and aviation, and it was a blast. So I'm thinking we're going to do it all over again.
Well, it's crazy too, because you talk about fitness and you talk about like fitness journeys. Everyone's journey is different, right? Like, and what I think's crazy is, for me, I played D1 football. I was an athlete. I worked out my whole life. Out of football, I was so burnt out of working out. It was like the last thing I wanted to do. So it took me 10 years. I was eventually sponsored by a supplement company. They were paying me, and I still couldn't force myself to work out. And then I even got you to be my coach for a month, and I still didn't work out. But now I have been working out for 6 months in a row. I have been killing it. And nice. Changing the game, man. So it's crazy how you can literally be getting paid, in my case. And I was like, I'm not going to work out.
Yeah. Motivation. It is very interesting. It is very interesting, the journey. And it's what I've come to find out is that not every training suits everybody the same, right? Maybe the training that we did together for a month was something that you didn't like, but what you've been doing obviously for 6 months now, that's it for you. That's what sticks. And that's the most important part, man. Something that's going to stick, that's with your lifestyle, that you like. Because if you're finding yourself that you're going in there and you're like, oh, I got to do this, and it feels like you're going to do something that you don't want, then you might want to look elsewhere for something that's more of your lifestyle, you know?
Yeah. Well, I feel like too, for me, it's just the fact I wasn't ready to start. Like I wasn't ready to jump in. Like the idea was in my mind that I want to get back in shape, and the idea was there that I need to work out, but I wasn't, like, I don't want to say rock bottom, but I wasn't at the place where I was forcing myself and ready to actually do it, if that makes sense. Like I had everything in my mind was like going the right direction, but I just wasn't ready to jump all in. But, you know, maybe it's community, maybe it's working out with a couple buddies across the street. So maybe it's all that helps it. And, you know, if I don't wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, they're knocking on my door trying to wake me up to get me to come work out. So
that's awesome. That's sometimes that's what it takes, yeah, man.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, good, cool. Good. Well, let's talk about you. Yeah. Enough about me being a lazy piece of crap for 10 years and I'm back in shape, but let's talk about you, man. So big things have changed, you know, before you didn't have the podcast. Now you have the podcast. You are currently a major airline pilot. Last time we talked to you, flying regionals. So let's start with airlines. Let's start how you got to where you are today, what your plan was, what you were thinking and what you wanted to do and how you made it happen.
Yeah, I've always wanted to land at the airline that I'm at right now and actually even fly the airplane that I'm on right now, which is a Boeing 737. My plan has always been, you know, get your hours as soon as you can and build that PIC time in the regional so that you can be qualified and ready to go at the majors, whoever calls. And that was exactly my thing, you know, at the regional where I was at. It was, you know, 2 years until I upgraded and I did just that. And then for 3 years, I sat in the left seat, accumulating those hours. And then I went to aviation conventions to have the opportunity to do a meet and greet with several airlines. And that is where there was the opportunity for me to shine, for me to be like, hey, you know, this is me. This is what I do. Obviously, we're all qualified pilots here, but this is something else that I do on the side. And that's obviously helping crew members with fitness and a healthy longevity lifestyle in the industry. And I think that that was one of the biggest things that set me apart, I guess, in that convention. And they liked it. So a couple months later, they gave me a call to be able to interview. And fortunately, I was able to skip the flow to the major airline and get hired off the street, which, you know, seniority is the biggest thing that you could go for because you never know what's going to happen. So I was very fortunate. I landed within, you know, the right people at the right time with the right things. And, you know, obviously a lot of work ethic behind all that. And, you know, it pushed through it. It went through and it was, I had a great interview and I got hired by them and it's been 18 months now on that airline.
So when you have a flow, I think most people just think they sit there and wait for that flow to come up and you hear about others applying to say not the opposite airline, but the other major airlines that are not included in that flow, but you don't really hear about them applying to the airline that's already with the flow. You know, when you're talking about that, it's like, I mean, I'm sure it's happened before, but I just haven't talked to anyone that's applied when they have the flow in a couple of years anyways. So it's kind of cool to hear about that.
Yeah. I think a lot of it was the timing as well, which is obviously something nobody's in control of, or you can't forecast it or time things right in this industry. I think at the time there was just like a small window where same regional, same airline might've picked up and that window closed and then it might open again. It's just, there's so many numbers behind the scenes. I think with pilot vacancies that we don't know, it's just so random what the airlines decide to do. And it's crazy that a lot of, you know, pilots end up where they want to be and they take different avenues to get there. But as long as you get to where you want to get, that's the most important part. And I always say that I'm blessed and I'm lucky too, to be able to have, you know, stepped into that air, into the major airline the way that it happened for me.
Have you heard of other people that have done that? Are there, I'm guessing you're not a unicorn. I'm guessing you're not the only one, but maybe someone's listening to this right now and they're like, all right, cool. I can apply to Delta. I can apply to American.
Yeah. You should always try. And I know a lot of other people that went the same route that I did and got very lucky as well. And they're in the same boat. And what I always encourage people to do is continue to apply, continue to update that app, because you just never know, that little window might open again that, you know, may cost you from taking a different avenue to get to where you want to be. So nothing, it doesn't hurt to continue to update it. And that consistency, that work ethic will show some way or another.
Yeah. And when you say that you're at the airline that you always wanted to go to, was this the only airline you applied to? Was your kind of outlook like, not every major airline is for me and there's only one airline that I want to work for?
Yeah, I actually applied to a lot. Because you just don't know. I just didn't know what was going to be the outcome for me. But the airline that I'm at now, that was my main goal because of the bases that they have, the culture of the airline. Obviously, in the regional that where I was at, that was, you know, pretty much you're brought up with that culture in it. I vibed a lot with it through social media. I was able to build what kind of feels like a family within the airline. And that kind of support really made me want to stick to that airline. But nonetheless, you got to go for what's best for you. And so you got to, you know, throw the reel out there and see what bites, what fishes are going to bite, because you don't know what your opportunities are going to be. And I got, again, I got lucky, and that airline bit the hook, and I went for it. But I did apply to other ones, and that convention gave me that opportunity to be able to meet them face to face. It's so different. It makes a huge, huge difference when you're able to shake, you know, the recruiter's hand and they remember you. You know, you make eye contact, you say something that's, you know, very valuable. They hear the same thing almost over and over and over again from these prepping companies, which they offer really great advice, but you got to think a little bit outside the box and think about what are they all saying and what can I say different to make an impact.
Yeah. How do you stand out? Right. Like, I mean, everyone's probably Googled what is the best airline prep for this airline. And they're like, all right, yeah, I'll pay $100 for that if I can get hired. And then everyone has the same thing to say. So how do you use that information to your advantage to not sound like an idiot, but also stand out? It's kind of like the $1 million question. Cause you got to personalize everything, right? You got to personalize that resume. You got to personalize the letter recommendations that you get. You got to personalize how you interview. You can't just be rote memory like you're studying for your oral, right? You got to put some personality, some pizzazz to it, man.
Exactly. And I think that that brings a lot more to, you know, I guess from an interviewer's standpoint, I guess if I was to be interviewing somebody, it would, or I, when I was getting interviewed, it put me more at ease. The fact that I can express myself a little bit more personally with these questions and not sound like I'm remembering them rote memory, like you said, like if you're going for an oral. That also gives, I guess, the other person who's interviewing you a little bit of a taste of like, okay, this guy, we're also looking for this guy or this girl's personality. Let me feel them out, because that's a huge, huge part of the interview. As of what I've, you know, what I've heard from other people that I interviewed with me and after so many classes more, that's what they've pretty much said.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they're talking to you to see if they would last in a cockpit with you for four legs or for 5-6 hours a day. Like, they don't, I mean, they of course care what you're going to say. They don't want you to say some unhinged stuff and just look totally psychotic, but they just want to make sure you're going to be cool to hang out with on overnight when, you know, you get stuck somewhere and you want to go fly or you want to go out and get food with them. You make sure they're not going to try to kill you or
cause any problems. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, man. It's cool. It's really cool to see kind of how you've kind of not grown up, but come up in the industry since we had that conversation last, and see you kind of go after all your goals and do everything. It's been awesome, man. It's been cool to see and inspiring. So keep on doing it.
Thank you, man. That means a lot. Thank you, bro.
Yeah, anytime. When you, there's a lot about mentality, right? Like when you have the goal, so you set like the big goal, like I want to work for this airline. I want to fly this airplane. I want to do this when I get older. You've reached that goal. You put so much when you're younger, you know, you put so much, like you dream about it. It's all you think about. It's all you're working towards. You finally get there. What's the feeling like when you get there? Like, obviously there's excitement that you finally got that, but now that you've been there for 18 months, is it everything you thought it was going to be? Is it, you know, a lot of people kind of say that as you move up in the airlines or as you move up in aviation, a lot of times it's the same. There can be a lot of sucky moments, but you just get paid more when you go up higher. Like, talk about kind of your feelings of getting the call and then now where you are for there for the last 18 months.
That is a excellent question. The feeling when I got the email of like, hey, you're past the next stage to be able to interview for this airline. I was actually in the middle of a bachelor party and I was like, everybody just hold on a second. I got to read this again just to make sure I'm not.
All right. We got to go back.
Yeah. So that was just like a surreal moment for a second. You know, a lot of things were going on around there, but I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I got this. Like, I almost got a little emotional because I was like, damn, all this hard work. This is it. This is the moment. And I still have another step to go through, but I know I'm ready for this. Like, everything that I prepared for, building hours and sharing experiences and everything, has led me to this moment. I know for a fact, without a doubt, that this interview is going to go really well. So I already had that confidence of going into that interview. But you always need that little extra filling in the gaps or preparing, which, you know, you kind of do things on your own and you study whatever you need to study and freshen up for those things. Moment of the interview was really fantastic. The interviewers that I had were really, really great. Really great job at putting you at ease and just having that kind of conversation with you. I do remember in my interview, I did say something that was a little bit I guess, living on the edge. They asked me this question, and this again comes from like standing out, right? Even till the last moment, even though I knew that this interview, I had it packed, I still wanted to stand out. And they asked me a question, and the way I answered it was just based on not a trending view, because that was what the question was for. I think the question was something about like, what do you think of the aviation market or trending is going towards in terms of financials in the industry and stuff like that? And my answer had nothing to do with that. My answer was what I truly felt about me having the opportunity to fly for the airline that I dreamt of always flying for. And that where I went from something extrinsic, which is monetary value, to something intrinsic, which is my personal value of flying for you, is what I think just put the cherry on top for everything. And so being a little bit, yeah, exactly. Being a little bit, you know, ballsy like that, it kind of helps out, but you have to kind of know how to do it. You know, you don't just want to say something too ballsy out there and then it's like the wrong thing to say.
But I'd be like Zlatan, you know, Ibrahimovic out there, right?
Not a yeah. So that high, I kind of kept it going from the moment I got that email towards the end of the interview. And then even towards my initial training, it was just so much excitement everywhere. Something new, something different. I'm ready to change it all up. And 18 months later, man, I am very happy every day to get in my car and go fly, because the people that I work with are great. The airplane that I'm flying, I love it. The routes that we're doing, I love them. And it's just fantastic. And now, like, yeah, I'm here. This is what I've always dreamed and achieved. And maybe being captain is the next thing, or flying the wide body is the next thing. But you're right. You're always just going to, it's going to be almost the same thing, just getting paid more. Maybe you get different routes here and there, and then you just coast for like the rest of your career, right? 20 years, 30 years, whatever it may be. My thing is you can only enjoy what you can every single day. If you focus too much on like, hey, yeah, I got here, now what? Well, there's a rest of your career that you got to enjoy. There's going to be challenges now that are presented. Were you married before? Were you not? Did you have kids before? Did you not? Like different stages of life. Things are just going to become different just by living life. Yeah, you go to work and you do the exact same thing, but are you going to see the exact same people all the time? Can you create different memories? Can you create different experiences for people? And that's where I think that when I reach that goal of mine, I know I haven't completely reached it yet, because being an airline pilot is not the only thing I want to be in life. You know, I also want to be so many more other things that are important to me. And I can do that while being an airline pilot. That is the ultimate goal. And just, it's a constant, you know, always achieving things.
Yeah. It's some next question I was going to ask you too, is like, when you have this big goal, you accomplish that goal, you know, you've been working toward it your whole career. Like what, I mean, essentially you said it's not about what comes next, but like, what is next? What do you work towards? Like, what do you go towards? Like, obviously captain or move up in airplanes, but your professional goal has been reached. Essentially, you reached your airline, you reached kind of what you thought was the greatest thing that could happen in your life. Like, how do you continue to improve in your life when you kind of feel like you've already made it, you know?
Right. And I think the next best thing, that at least for me in my perspective, is that you pass down what you know and then inspire others to be, who want to be where you're at, and show them how to be there, show them how to get there. And because I was fortunate enough to have people show me that growing up, and the best thing I could do is just pass that down, you know? So I think that's the next big thing, which is you can't reach a peak with that. There's always going to be people who are going to want to do this, and you're always going to be able to share this kind of great information, this kind of inspiring things to the next upcoming generation to be pilots in the airlines or corporate, wherever they want to be.
All right. Talk about the differences between regional and major airline. Is it like that drastic? Is your life that much better? Is it really just the money? Like, give me all the scoop, man.
It's that much better. It's essentially right now, the regional airline is making way more money than I am.
Dang it.
I was like, wow, I left at the right time.
Dang it.
But you know, for me, it's never really been about how much money I'm going to make. For me, it's really been like, I want to enjoy this kind of, you know, flying. I want to enjoy this kind of making experiences, because that's what I grew up in. Everybody in my family are pilots, and the experiences that I heard when I was young, I was like, I want to experience that. And obviously aviation changes are not the same now, but for me, the kind of layovers, the kind of flying is a whole lot different. The only thing that I'm having a harder time adjusting with is that at the regionals, you fly with a lot younger people. Here at the main line, it's a little bit, there's a bigger age gap. And sometimes the conversations are just a lot different. You know, you have somebody who's 60 something, has gone through a lot of stuff in their life, and you're 30 something, you're just maybe starting to have kids, and it's just so different. There's obviously a great learning curve from their experiences that they share with you, but you also kind of miss having those conversations, like, you know, with people your age. And it's just a little different. But other than that, I love the lifestyle, man. Sometimes there's days, obviously, where it's just, you feel like you're at the regional because of how many legs you have to do a day. Like, I thought going into mainline, I was not going to have to do three legs every day.
That's not cool. What's wrong with three
legs? You know, I was like, but you know, I not every trip is like that. But when I was, you know, starting, it was like that. It was a lot. I was like, wow, I feel like I never really left the regional.
Yeah.
I'm just getting paid a little bit more, but you know, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I'd love to do three legs a day. Try four or five.
Wow.
And not every day, but a lot of times it can be a drag, but yeah. Anyways, yeah. That's awesome. I mean, like, just getting to where you are, it's a goal for so many people, and it's crazy because it feels like it's so much more, I don't want to take away from anyone getting hired, but it just feels like it's so much more attainable now than what it was 5-10 years ago. Like, there is, I feel like we lose out or lose kind of focus on how lucky we have it right now to have these jobs that are offered to us and the pay that's offered to us, because it wasn't 10 years ago when I was training that my CFI had 4,000 hours and was getting paid 10 grand to be a part-time CFI and couldn't get a job at Great Lakes. It was like a whole different world out there. So when everyone gets this opportunity, just remember that this is not always the case. And this is especially when you're flying with the older generation, because they might see you as kind of like a privileged and you haven't really gone through what they've gone through, flown checks through the night in a 310 or a 206 or done all that crazy stuff. So you got to understand that they had a rough draw, and they're not meaning to take it out on you, but they're definitely jealous of the fact that you are probably what, year one, year two, and you're making almost $200,000-$250,000 when they didn't make that until they're upgraded like 30 years into their career.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think one of the best ways to kind of ease the communication with that is really taking into consideration the captains, because obviously they're older, but their experience or what it was like when they got hired first with the airline, right? We're talking people who got hired in the late 80s, you know, early 90s, and the amount of furloughs that they had to go through and what side jobs did they have to do and all of that. And I saw my dad do that. My dad flies for an international airline, but you know, it's different internationally. Like, internationally, my dad lost his job, but he was out of a job from one night to the other because the owners of the airline decided to take the money and leave. And now you're in the street like, whoa, what? What do we have? And you know, so I know what that's like. And we kind of lived through that. And there was no other choice for my parents to become resourceful. And what are we going to do? You know, we managed to do it until my dad got hired by another airline. But it's always, you have to be very humble, I think, in whatever position you're going to be in, whether you're at regional, you just got hired on a mainline. It's important to understand that pilots before you did not have the best, the greatest opportunity, like how you are having it now. The majority of pilots are happy for you. Some of them might not be, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. What matters is how you carry on that conversation. And what matters is how you are able to communicate with them and to be like, hey, you know, this is a whole timing thing. And I really, I can take appreciation of what you did at that time for you to get through what you had to get through, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that kind of makes the person kind of understand like, hey, this person's actually, you know, doesn't sound privileged or anything yeah. like that. So,
and as someone who's seen kind of both sides of left seat, right seat, And then going to a new airline, essentially, and going back to the right seat, working with a whole different type of crowd, your mentality for how you interact, how you handle yourself is going to be different when you're turning left instead of turning right. What would you say are some good traits or some good things that you can do to be a good FO, not to be the one that everyone rags on, like, oh my gosh, I'm paired with Fernando again. Gosh, what are we going to do? Oh, so annoying. Like, how do you be the guys like, yeah, I'm fine with Fernando. I can't wait.
I think it's the mindset of just being, hey, how can I make the captain's life easy? Okay. That's my job. All right. Aside from everything else that I have to, they say the 737, the right seat on that plane is the busiest plane in the industry right now. I definitely can feel that sometimes when there's a lot of things happening. But at the same time too, I got to be capable of handling all my responsibilities and still considering what he might be thinking or she might be thinking or what's coming up next, because I want to make their life easier, right? They need to focus on certain things, and that's what our standard operating procedures are. And a lot of the airlines, who's going to focus on what? But even before the flight, during the flight, it's all about, for me, it's just how can I be of that the captain doesn't have to do that much more extra work. And that mentality, I think, just drives me to ask the right questions, to do the right things. I think at times, of course, you're going to mess up along the way. But I think with that mentality, when I got my yearly review or my probation review, the comments that captains left on my reviews were just outstanding. The chief pilots were like, dude, are you paying these people to write this stuff for you?
Like, yeah, actually I am.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, like, I told them, no, I'm still on first year pay. I can't afford that. Yeah, right. But I think having that mentality and just kind of being like a chameleon, you know, too, it's kind of like you fly with one captain, you know, you have these kinds of conversations. They like to do things a certain way. I adapt to it. Somebody likes to do something different, I adapt to it. As long as it's inside the standards and the procedures and everything, I adapt pretty well, you know? And I think that's something else that's helps with getting along with the other person in the flight deck.
Yeah. And I think it's important too, how you phrase your questions, right? So like if you, maybe you notice they do something wrong, can't be like, oh, you're an idiot. What are you doing? You know, it's like, how can you make someone see something? And this can go for a captain on the field. It's like, how can you make them think that they come up with the right answer on their own? Not how can you scold them? It's like the way that they're really going to learn from that experience is by learning, by figuring it out, right? Like not by being scolded. They're going to shut off immediately and they're just going to turn away and they're probably not going to like you, not going to fly again. They're embarrassed. But if you can figure out a way to phrase something in kind of a learning experience or a way where they're like, wait, I think, what did I just say? Man, I can't believe I said that. And then they're like, oh yeah, this is it, you know? So I think that's very important too, is how you phrase things and how you say things. Your tone can really go a long way too, because who knows what's going on in their life or what they're focused on.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. There's a technique that I can't remember who kind of taught it to me, but I also feel like this is the way I just kind of behave in the flight deck. It's when I see something that someone's doing and I'm not quite sure, or they might be wrong, I always think to myself, what's going on here that I might not know right now? So I ask the person, hey, can you just tell me how you're doing that or why, or it's something I'm just, maybe it's another different method of me learning something. I'd love to know why you're doing that way or something like that, but phrase it somewhere where you're not questioning what they're doing in terms of like you're doing it wrong, but questioning it in a way that you're interested to know why they're doing that. And I think that that changes the dynamic completely in the flight deck.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And as someone that has been on the right side in the corporate world and the left side of the corporate world, it's definitely true. And I think the most difficult part is just managing the different personalities that you fly with. Because, I mean, even in the airlines, you're probably going from different captains on different days sometimes. But so just the ability to have the same conversations maybe two or three times a day where like, oh, you got any kids? Like, no. Yeah, I got one kid. You know, it's like, what are your hobbies? Well, I talk on a podcast. I sell coffee. You know, it's like, oh, coffee. That's cool. I like coffee. So like just having the same conversation, you know, it's just sometimes that can be the most difficult part, is showing interest in someone else's life when you've had the same mundane questions asked over and over and over again.
Yes. Yes, it definitely is. And when I started to kind of pick up on that, You know, it's like the most famous one. Do you live here? How close do you live to the base?
Oh, I can never live there.
Yeah, it's something like that. You know, they're the same kind of routine questions, but I think even though they're the same, the answers can sometimes lead to really great conversations. Sometimes somebody commutes from somewhere that you think is really cool and you're really interested can set up you up nicely for, you know, the first leg where you get to know them more and about, you know, where they come from and things like that. And it's pretty cool. But sometimes it does get a little repetitive.
All right. So 737 currently. You said that was kind of the plane you wanted to be on, but let's face it, no one's really dreaming about flying a 737 for the rest of their life. Unless you would have chosen a different airline. But what's like
right.
Let's take a break from today's episode to hear from our sponsor, RAA. Hey guys, Justin here. Did you know that more than 55% of adults don't protect their income with disability insurance? And for pilots like us, with fixed career limits and higher job risk, there's even more riding on missed benefits opportunities than most. But you can take control and full advantage of all valuable benefits your airline offers, starting with free benefit analysis from my partners at RAA. With your free benefits analysis, an advisor specializing in your airline's benefits plan will help tailor an election strategy that best fits your personal needs and goals, including retirement savings, investments, health savings accounts, healthcare and disability coverage, and more. Listen, your benefits aren't just protecting your health. They're critical to protecting your long-term wealth, too. But open enrollment is approaching fast and only lasts for a limited time, just like this free benefits analysis offer. So don't wait. Schedule your free benefit analysis today at raa.com/pilot to pilot. That's raa.com/pilot to pilot. Now back to today's episode. What's your game plan for aircraft? Is it best seniority, like what your seniority can hold? Or would you rather say a 787 or a 350, you know, something like cool, that's just awesome. Would you jump on that immediately knowing that seniority would not be as great? Or are you willing to wait, maybe fly an aircraft that's not as cool to you, but your seniority will make it better?
I would rather keep where I'm more senior at, especially if I like the aircraft. Right now, the common choices between, you know, when your seniority number gets to a certain number is you either upgrade on the narrow body or you try wide body first officer, and you'll hold out as a narrow body first officer until you can get wide body first officer. Because once you jump from one side to the other, you might be seat locked and then you can't, you know, move anywhere for 2 years, right? I'd rather have better seniority as a first officer than jumping to a captain on the same airplane or being very junior on a wide body. So like, I'd rather just stay right now in this seat where I'm at, first officer 7-3, until I know I can hold something decent on the triple and then make my way up there. Because the quality of life that you can have is the most important thing. You know, obviously aside from the money, managing it and all that stuff, you know, everybody has their own things. If you like to have boats and Rolexes and stuff like that, you're going to be working a certain amount of hours. You know, if you're not into that stuff and you're into different stuff, you're going to be working a different amount of hours. So it's really up to you. But I personally think quality of life is more important. And so that's why I'd rather hold out.
For sure. And I'm guessing routes too is another thing. It's a,
yeah, for sure.
Plane fly. Like it's just a plane fly where it'll go. If you don't want to fly to Asia, then maybe you don't want to fly the 787 or the 350. You want to fly to South America, maybe the 777 or the 737 is perfect. You know, so it's
correct.
Got to take and choose from that.
Yeah. And also it's not just the airplane, but also the base where you're at. So, you know, you're in a certain base on the 777 or on the 78. You might be doing exactly what you said, more of Asia or more of Europe or more of South America, deep south. And it just kind of also depends on that too. Like I possibly would be willing to commute to New York for a wide body for a little bit, just to do that kind of flying, you know? The wide body flying out of Miami is mostly predominantly deep south. And if that, I can feel that might get a little bit too repetitive. So I would love to try out in New York, maybe, you know, for a little bit, but I'd have to see where I'm at in life there, you know?
Exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. You got a girlfriend, fiance?
Girlfriend.
Girlfriend? Yeah, yeah. All right. I'm throwing out into the world. The fiance. She's going to listen to this and be like, Justin, I like that.
By the time when this podcast comes out, no, I'm just playing.
She's going to be like, what?
But it's coming. It's coming.
Awesome. I love it. But yeah, I mean, yeah. It depends on what's going on in your life. But yeah, another big tip, and we kind of mentioned this before, is like staying in shape, staying fit. Have you found it easier to be healthy at a major airline? Would you say it's all kind of the same? I know you said that at the beginning, it was kind of like you're doing 3 legs a day. You didn't think you'd be working that hard, but now 1-2 legs a day, probably better overnights. You probably find it a little bit easier to go get a workout and get some sleep.
In terms of fitness, nothing has really changed for me, except for what I currently aim to target my fitness on, right? Those goals changed for me quite a bit, but nothing's really changed. The meal prepping is still the same. Finding the time to work out is still the same, regardless of how many legs I'm flying. But what I have noticed was that this flying is a little bit different. So you are sitting for a lot longer in the legs that you're flying. And I find that my body gets a lot more stiff. And so I have to adjust. The timing to find the fitness is still the same. I'm adjusting what I'm doing in that time now. I'm not going as hard as I used to because, you know, one, we're getting a little bit older, right? And you have to, and so we have to kind of keep in mind, if I keep overworking my body as I'm getting older, my longevity or that long-term fitness goal is starting to slowly decrease for you. Working harder is not always better. Working smarter and working hard within that smart training is always the best. So my mindset has really changed on, let's take training for myself a little bit more, you know, regimented with how much are you like consuming in a day, in terms of, you know, food, and then also how much am I expending in a day? Because I didn't know that I didn't eat as many calories as much as I burn. Like, I didn't know that until I actually, Jess and I counted a little bit. It's like, how much are you taking in? And I was only getting like 2,500 calories. My burn is about 3,000. And I'm like, every day I'm under 500 calories. No wonder sometimes I'm tired. Or no wonder sometimes I can't push that much more. But if I force myself to push more, I will be overloading. I'll be overworking. And that doesn't set me up right the next day. Now that I'm at the major, I feel that a lot more. And I'm like, oh, that's a problem. So let's adjust. And that's what's been the new thing for me this past 18 months.
What do you think some of the best things that you can do to help track fitness, health, sleep on the road? What's kind of like your go-to for that kind of stuff?
Definitely you have to have some sort of wearable that you can see this kind of information. And I mean, you and I both know there's no better wearable than Garmin. I mean, let's go, baby. Yeah. There is just an great amount of information that you can have on this wearable and on the app. It could be overwhelming, but if you ever decide to take your fitness to that level, it's there and it'll tell you. I mean, this thing has told me things that I was not aware of before, because one thing is having your mentality and the other thing is what's actually really happening in your body. You could be like, I want to be the best, and you're going so hard and your watch is like, dude, you need to relax. Okay.
chill. So,
yes, exactly. Or the other way around, your watch might be telling you, hey, maybe it's time to get a little bit more caloric, start doing some exercise, pretty much. And so that to me has been a great, great tool to use on the road, because now I'm more aware of what's actually happening with my body instead of just what I think is happening.
What I love too is the body battery and sleep. So I never really wore a wearable when I was sleeping. If I woke up bad, it's like I probably didn't sleep bad. But figuring out why you're sleeping bad and figuring out like your HRV and how it ties into your stress and your body battery has made me have the ability to make like educated and kind of scientific back decisions on when I need a fatigue, right? Like, oh dang, my body battery's at 20. It's like, no wonder why I don't feel too well. You know, it's like, maybe it's time to call this one and go to the hotel. So having that ability, because when you were talking about how it's when you want to go after your fitness goals, like these watches and these wearables, they are there just for the basic stuff too, like your heart rate. You want an ECG or EKG, whatever your app calls it. You know, you got that on you. You want to see how much water you drink, whatever it is. Like, they can do all of it, and it's just been really cool. One thing I thought was crazy is last week my HRV was like skyrocketing, was plummeting. I was like, what the heck? Like, and I wasn't sleeping that well, and I was like, this is weird. And then a day later I was sick, and I was like, my watch is telling me that I was pretty much sick already, but I didn't physically feel bad, but all of my stats were just plummeted. My HRV was down. My stress levels were higher. My fitness readiness was down low. And it said I needed like 24. I didn't work out. And I was like, this is strange. Like, and I, for sure enough, the next morning I woke up and I was like, holy smokes, I'm sick.
Wow.
Watch knew it.
Yeah. It's so incredible. I think that the more info you can put in the watch, like for example, wearing it to sleep, great. If you hydrate or whatever water you're drinking, you can input that on the watch too. And you know, you're tracking now your hydration, you're tracking now your sleep, you're tracking around your workload, you're tracking. You can even put your calorie in consumption into the app for the watch. And the more you give it, the more accurate the information's going to be. But that may sound so overwhelming. Like, there is a point where I mean, I'm not going to put in the calories that I'm consuming. Like, that's where I, you know, I yeah, pretty much. Cause then it's a lot. For me, it then doesn't become very enjoyable unless I'm, you know, going to go for some serious competition of some sort of sport. That's when I'll do it. And the great thing is that the D2 Mach 1 Pro has the capability for that if that time comes or when that time comes, right? You're not like, oh, I'm going to run a triathlon, but I have a wearable that only lasts 3 hours on a GPS. Well, you just lost all your training for the rest of your swimming and cycling that you're going to have to do, you know? So you can't even, with some wearables, you can't even track your training. And one of my best friends actually was training for one, and that's what happened to him. And he's like, I need to go to Garmin. And he effectively went to Garmin, got his watch, and through the whole training, the battery lasted the whole time. And he was able to get his metrics perfect down to the race day. So that's another great thing too.
And you know, if anyone was ever on the fence of what they wanted to watch or what they wanted to buy, and full disclosure, everyone knows this, like, I'm team Garmin. I'm sponsored by Garmin. I was given this watch, but I'd buy it. One of the main reasons is because it has this cool flashlight. You see? It's going off. Yeah. Boom. Yeah, look at that. I'm not going to lie. This is the greatest feature on this watch. I thought it was going to be a gimmick. I'm sorry for saying that, but I did. But this thing is amazing and I love it. It's the best.
Yeah.
But anyways, if you want just to buy this watch, to have this watch, the battery lasts 21 to 23 days. Don't have to charge it. I go out for a week, I never charge it. I don't even bring a charging cable. I come back and I still have another week left or another week and a half left to go. And that's with moderate usage. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's incredible, the technology with the battery that Garmin continues to implement on these watches. And like you as well, I was also given the Mach 1 Pro and I also work with Garmin as well. And I've owned a Garmin since 2017. And I started off with the Fenix 5. I bought that one and I was like, I love this thing because it can track this much. Ever since 2017, it's been exponentially great, the amount of info you can still get and put into this watch. While I think, and I believe, that other wearables are just starting to implement stuff that Garmin had 5-6 years ago, you know? There's a reason why Garmin is leading in that kind of stuff. And, you know, the fact that you can have the convenience of not having to carry a charger with you almost everywhere you go is beyond awesome, in my opinion.
Definitely agree. And it's, you know, it's crazy. When I first got the deal with Garmin, I told them, I was like, you know, this is crazy, because it was like in 2015, I did a sprint triathlon, maybe 2016. And I wanted a Garmin watch very bad, but I was like a free pilot, you know, it's just something I couldn't spend at the time. So I made a video where I actually made like some fancy, I don't remember the name of it, out of paper. And I had all the things like flipped. Like I made a video, posted it online, like a short reel before reels were reels. I ripped off as like run, swim, bike. And I even like, I jumped in the pool with it. Like it was crazy. So it's having like that full circle moment. I'll probably try to find it and put it back up here.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, it was crazy. Just kind of like speaking it to existence. Like what I wanted was to work with Garmin eventually. And I'm sure they know, they can go back in the emails, be like, hey, how you doing? Like, I'd love to work. You don't even have to pay me. Like just sign me up, please.
Yeah.
Well, here we are. So it's cool.
It's awesome, man. I think there's such a great company, not only from the products that they make, but their leadership and amongst the people that we work with. I remember this was after maybe like, I don't know, a year or two after our podcast. I was in a Garmin Teams meeting and then I saw your name up. I'm like, damn, that's cool. I'm here with Justin as well. This is awesome. And it's so great to be part of just a great group of people, you know, working with Garmin and in such a great company. And it's awesome, man. I'm totally excited to be doing all that.
So moral of the story, get a Garmin watch.
Yeah.
I have the scale too. I bought the scale. That's how like I got into it. Like wow. My three buddies and I, we all went in together. We have weigh-ins before we work out and all that kind of stuff and track all that stuff. So the scale's cool too. So all their stuff's awesome.
You know what I really, and I kind of want to know your favorite way to use the Garmin, but one of my favorite things is the actual live heart rate when you're actually in a strength setting or running setting or whatever kind of activity you're doing, seeing where you are, what zone you're in, color coded and also digital, what your actual heart rate is, gives me so much real time on time information that I can adjust my training right there. Right there. I'm like, oh, wow, I am in zone 5. I need to back down a little bit if I want to hold a little bit more cardiovascular conditioning in some certain zone. Right. Or also to let me know immediately if I'm overdoing it. Am I zone 5 for way too long? Okay, I need to back down. I love that. That's by far my favorite thing.
I like, there's two things that I like. One is I like the social aspect of it, your connectivity. So you can get all your friends on there. And when I'm on the road, I can see if my friends are still working out and we'll make fun of each other. Like, what are you doing? Why aren't you working out? And we'll kind of like, we'll like each other's workouts. We're like, dang, man, I burned this many more calories than you in the same workout, like all that kind of stuff. So kind of like that social aspect of it right there. And what I think is cool too, is if you have a stressful flight or just any flight at all, seeing how your stress and your heart rate reacts to that, say you're in training, right? Say you're doing your check ride. Like I thought it was cool to go look at my watch and see what my heart rate did at certain moments and what my stress did at certain moments and how it ebbed and flowed with the stress and what I was doing, the task at hand. And it always kind of matched up. And sometimes I'm surprised that my stress and heart rate was way lower than I thought it was going to be. And other times you're like, dang, I kind of was stressing out there a little bit. Like maybe I should work on that, you know? So I think it can be kind of a cool tool to go back and debrief and kind of look at that, which that might not be one way that someone would think to use it, like to go back and look at it in that aspect of it, but it gives you kind of like a 72-hour range. You can kind of get a good idea of when you're having that, those episodes or spikes or plateaus.
Yeah, I think that's a really fantastic way to use it too. It's funny you mentioned the training thing, because I remember when I was doing V1 cuts on the 7.3, I would check what my heart rate would be when I knew it was coming, right? Like before we, you know, restarted at the runway and we're going, I would look at my heart rate and I'd see like 42, right? Take off, have the engine failure. I'm like, this thing's probably going to skyrocket to like 100 and something. But I mean, if you're doing your thing calm, nice, doing your thing, it should be just fine. I looked at it after I got like settled down, it was like 52. And I was like, oh my God. But you definitely feel like your heart's going much more, but in reality, it's really not. It's gotta be something else. Right.
And it's there's just,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. And sometimes, stress or like a little bit of anxiety or of something may make you think that your heart is beating faster. Just take a look at that watch and it may not be the case, you know, and that's really helpful information too.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And I didn't mean to talk about Garmin for 25 minutes, but you know, here we are. So yeah. Shout out to Garmin. If anyone thinks that this is them paying us to do it, I mean, they did technically pay me, but we did this because we love the product.
Absolutely.
And highly recommend. But Fernando, that is all I have for you, man. It is 9:48. So we are over our time. I already made you come back and redo this again because I left my computer in my room and my wife was sleeping when she's on nights. So thank you for being very flexible and making this happen, because it's all about you making it happen, because I messed up today. So appreciate you.
Not at all, brother. It was fantastic talking with you. And just like the first time, man, I had a ton of fun. I think we share really great info for people here. And you actually inspired me to start a podcast, because I just heard of how great you get to talk about things and in so much in depth that I was like, man, I kind of want to do this with fitness. So thank you, man, for inspiring me to be able to take on a new journey and a new podcast. And I'm still learning a bunch of stuff, but hopefully I can get as popular as you, man.
Well, don't get too good at it, because then we got to compete. And that's when I, you know, play football at Ohio State, man. I compete with the best.
I know. That's the athletic mindset, man. Let's right? go. Time, man.
There'll be one champion, right? I'm just kidding. I know it's cool. I love seeing people do stuff. And if you can help someone out and do what you're doing, and love talking to you, man. We'll see you around. All right. Appreciate coming on.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Appreciate it.
That's a wrap on today's podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy this podcast, check out Pilot's Coffee. You can go to boldaviator.com and you can get the best hat in the game. That's the Pilot hat. Aviation, I'm going out for 5 days tomorrow, so I need to get some rest because I got an early wake up. That's all I have for you today, and as always, happy flying. Pilot the Pilot LLC is compensated to make recommendations to his or her followers regarding the services of RAA or Allworth Airline Advisors, companies of Allworth Financial, LP, or Allworth. Promoter is not an employee or investment advisor representative of Allworth. Promoter is a current client of Allworth. Allworth pays promoter a fee of $4,000 a month for sponsorship of the Pilot podcast. Due to the compensation arrangement between Allworth and promoter, promoter has an incentive to recommend Allworth, resulting in material conflict of interest. Promoter's role on behalf of Allworth is limited strictly to making recommendations regarding the services of Allworth, introducing or referring prospective clients to Allworth. Promoter has no responsibility with respect to Allworth's investment advisor or other advisory services.